to him for a real little bit last night, but he seems like a really, really nice guy, and I think he's going to have a really good story. Here is Harmon V. from Akron, Ohio.
You might want to do something with that volume if you value your speakers. He knows the drill. Hi, everybody. I'm a real alcoholic. My name's Harmon Vealey. I'm going to go ahead and get this stuff out of the way, too, because we'll be flying everywhere. I am delighted beyond words. And for some people, that really could be a blessing. Because my talk is like my drink, and once I start, I don't stop. But I will be aware of that. Before we get started, there are some things that I need to do and want to do. And first and foremost, I want to thank the committee, and particularly George and all the committee members. How about you guys standing up? We need to acknowledge your work. Can we see who you are? Come on, let's go. See, that's the nuts and bolts of this thing. We were, Mickey and I were talking about that before, how it works. We were talking about all different types of levels of service. And thank you guys for doing that. And I want to thank Bobby. I want to thank Tom. And I want to thank Fran for leading the way, if you will. And because of God's grace, and because I'm a member in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found a book called Alcoholics Anonymous that had 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as of today, I've been sober 10,326 days, which is 28 years, 3 months, and 7 days. And I kind of joke about that. Yeah, that's for God, obviously. I'm the lucky recipient of that. I joke about this, and you guys that are from this area, I did steal this, and we heard about that. Nothing new will be coming out of this mouth tonight, but this one guy talks about having 3 different sobriety dates, and I'm one of those, and I gave you my sobriety date. That's July 10th of 1987, alcohol sobriety date. Little did I know, about 2 years later, I had quit smoking, and that's the story in itself, so that's a sobriety date. And I have an emotional sobriety date, and that was about 3 minutes ago, so yeah. And that will be the crux of what we're going to talk about. For what it's worth, and I just found this out by accident. This was a couple, 3 years ago. I was doing a talk in, I think it was up at Paris Township there. Billy, anyhow, somebody comes up and says, I heard you talk about Casey Stewart. And I said, yeah. He goes, let me tell you a story about that. My sponsor, his name's Ted. Ted was sponsored by Casey Stewart. Casey was sponsored by a guy named Jerry Bennett, and Jerry Bennett was sponsored by Dr. Bob. So what does that mean? I'm a drunk from Akron. That's all that it means. But it's a great story. It's a great story. But if anybody, you know, if you follow your lineage, believe it or not, you go all the way back on there. And it's that was absolutely a fascinating story to me. And yeah, and it's just it's a great thing. I like to start with this one prayer that really sets the tone of what I like to talk about. And, you know, we were talking and hearing about a story. Really, the story's not going to be about me, thank God. I mean, I happen to stumble in between these lines. The story's about alcohol, about alcoholism. The story's about Alcoholics Anonymous, and most importantly, the story's about Almighty God. And I happen to stumble in, and so I'm not going to bore you with dates and details and so on and so forth, because 95% of my life story has absolutely nothing to do with my alcoholism. And the 5% that would be hid behind the 95%. And before you know it, I'd be back here telling you a tale of woe and stories and the poor me, and pour me a drink. Anyhow, this prayer goes like this. I call it the prayer for the day. It goes like this. Dear God, so far today, I've done all right. I haven't gossiped. I haven't lost my temper. I haven't been grumpy, nasty, or selfish. But in a few minutes, God, I'm going to get out of bed, and that's when I'm going to need all the help I can get. Amen. Now, I'm sure we got one around here. There's a big book, right? And when I said I'm a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety, He says that alcohol is but a symptom of what's wrong with me, and the bottle is but a symbol. I talk about alcoholism and not just drinking. Yeah, I get it. You got to drink to be alcoholic. I'm not saying that. But recovery from alcoholism, not physical sobriety, those are two different realms. And so many times, unfortunately, we're not talking about the common problem, even much less the common solution. My time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found this prayer really sums up my journey, and it goes like this. Lord, take me where you want me to go. Lord, let me meet who you want me to meet. Lord, tell me what you want me to say, and Lord, keep me out of your way. Amen. And the reason that I say that is what we're going to be talking about is a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Don't you hate jerks that get up behind the podium and quote pages out of the big book? Anyhow, on page 21, he talks about a real alcoholic. That's what I am. We'll get there. But I like to start also with this story, and it's kind of humorous. I thought it was just kind of cute, so I was saying it. But the more that I tell it, the more I realize it has everything to do with what we're going to be talking about tonight. And the story goes like this. This lady was at the drugstore, and she went to the pharmacist, and it was her turn in line. And when she got up to the pharmacist, she kind of drops her voice, and she goes, hey, I need you to write a prescription for cyanide. I'm going to poison my husband. And the pharmacist says, my God, lady, are you crazy? If I do that, you'll go to jail. I'll go to jail. We'll never see the light of day. She goes, I don't think you understand. If you see what I have in my purse, you're going to change your mind. And the pharmacist says, I don't think so, but let me see it. So she carefully opens up her purse and hands this pharmacist a photograph. And like Bill's story, the word aghast, she was aghast. And the reason she was aghast, she looked down at this photograph, and it was a picture of this guy's wife and her husband in bed. And then he goes to the lady, my God, why didn't you tell me you had a prescription? So now here's what I'm saying. Twofold, if anybody's buying your medicine, you better double check it, number one. But number two, they had a common problem and they had a common solution. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we got a common problem called alcoholism. We've got a common solution called Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps. In other words, a real alcoholic of my sort who's placed myself beyond human aid, putting the plug in the jug and sitting in the AA meeting is not called recovery, that's called suicide. Okay, and we're going to talk about alcoholism, okay? And like I said, and I get it about drinking and so on and so forth. And this thing called alcoholism, I didn't get it until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And you notice I said that again, because I was around AA twice. Man, that's painful when you're around AA and you're a real alcoholic and you're dying of alcoholism. It wasn't until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that things happen. Anyhow, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, there was an old timer, and you know, I come from that farming community called Akron, Ohio, 2 hours west here on the turnpike. This guy used to run around, he'd say, you're sick, sick, sick. And I used to get mad, because it was true, but I didn't know what the guy was trying to tell me. He was trying to tell me that you're dying from a threefold illness called alcoholism, not twofold, threefold. And it wasn't until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous where I found out what it was. Yeah, in the beginning of the book, a thing called the doctor's opinion. And here's an alcoholic of my sort, real alcoholic, the hopeless variety. First is the physical factor. And until I understood this, believed it, there is no way I could get on beyond anything. This has, is, and always will be. I am allergic to alcohol. And obviously, when Silkworth wrote it, allergy was the best word he could come up with. And that is an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And that would fit me. Abnormal is no more than a minority. Statistically, 1 out of 10 people got what I got when it comes to alcohol. And I've had it since my first drink. And it's all academic. Doesn't matter if you're born with it, you drink your way into it. Once you got it, you got it. Once an alcoholic always is. And here's the allergy to alcohol, or the abnormal reaction. When I take one drink of alcohol, there's only one thing I can guarantee after that. My body takes over and demands a second drink. I give it a second drink, and it demands more than after the first drink. So the more I drink, the more I have to drink, because my body produces a physical craving for alcohol. And once I start drinking, I don't stop till I'm sick, drunk, locked up, in trouble, all the above. You've got to be alcoholic to have that happen. That happened to me every time I drank. There was never, ever did I have too much. I you know what I'm saying? Once I started, my body took over, and it didn't matter what needed to be done, what should have been done, what I lost, what I'm going to lose, all that stuff, it isn't going to happen. I'm off and running. So that's the physical part. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. It's not losing jobs and houses and families and getting teeth kicked down my throat. All that happened to me, but that don't make me alcoholic. I got to have that phenomenon of craving. I got to have that allergy to body of the body. And here's what we do to each other coming in. You tell the guy, don't take the first drink. Well, not in that special. So if I can't drink because of the physical allergy, you tell me not to drink. But I got something more powerful than the physical part, and it's in between my ears. It's called a mental obsession, an obsession of the mind. And that's contrary to everything I know, believe, and I want. And that obsession is someday, some way, I'm going to be able to control and enjoy my drinking, and I pursue it to the gates of insanity and death. The obsession of the mind, I am condemned to drink no matter what. Don't matter what I lost, what I'm going to lose, what's going to happen, all the pain and misery, that isn't going to keep me sober. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm condemned to drink because of my mind. I'm condemned to die because of the body, the physical allergy. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. My body's killing my mind. My mind's killing my body. My body's killing my mind. I'm powerless over alcohol because I'm condemned to drink. I'm powerless over alcohol because I can't safely drink. I'm powerless over alcohol because I can't live in a world with it. I'm powerless over alcohol because I can't live in a world without it. I'm powerless over alcohol, and here's the third and the most thing that we're all running, I shouldn't say all running away, a lot of people are running away for it. Why did I drink to begin with? It's the spiritual malady. We heard it earlier today. Silkworth describes the spiritual malady. We are restless, irritable, discontent. And I'm going to add a few choice words to it. Full of fear, guilt, shame, and remorse. I live in a life of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I hate you. I hate me. I hate life. It sucks, and I need some relief. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. The hole in the soul, the gangrene of the soul. I need some relief. So now that I've got that thing called alcoholism, I'm sick in body and mind and soul. I've got three treatments for it. What are they? Number one's to drink. I did that for 17 years. That was the solution, not the problem. That's why I'm alcoholic. Sobriety's the problem. Life's the problem. I need a solution. It was alcohol. So obviously, door number one is to drink. When that no longer worked, I had door number two. The book that I talked about that has the solution, 12 Steps, Vital Spiritual Awakening, Spiritual Experience, Psychic Change, Essential Psychic Change. And the second appendix uses 13 different words to describe what it is. Door number three is to blow my brains out because I cannot and will not live in this thing called untreated alcoholism. I will seek some relief. My alcohol didn't cause my alcoholism. It treated it. Therefore, we're telling each other, don't drink and you'll feel better. Yeah, you'll feel better, all right. You'll feel the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the terror, the hate, all the things that cause you to drink to begin with. Not drinking is not a substitute for drinking. There is a substitute. It's called the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. But it takes some work, that dirty four-letter word that ends with a K. And it takes some time. And obviously, that is the court of last resort. Now that I know what alcoholism is, now I can treat it. Therefore, not drinking and sitting in a meeting, like I said earlier, that cannot, does not, will not produce recovery. Can't do it. I've placed myself beyond human aid. So, going back to real alcohol, obviously on page 21, he talks about real alcohol, moderate drinker, and a hard drinker. Now, I did a lot of drinking in L.A. Somebody comes up to me afterwards and says, oh, man, I didn't know you were in California. I said, no. L.A. is Lower Akron. If you haven't ever been down there, it's nasty. I'm sure you don't have them up where you came from, but in L.A., Lower Akron, they got some of these bars that are pretty nasty. I mean, you know, just the boozed and used and urine and blood on, you know. Anyhow, this moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic, they're at one of these dives. They all order their drinks up, and they look down, and all three of them got flies in it. The moderate drinker says, man, I can't believe it. I'm with these losers. He's never going to be, he doesn't have the allergy. He doesn't have the obsession. He goes home, cuts the grass, do whatever he do. Don't get it, never will. Anyhow, the hard drinker looks like a real alcoholic. But either one of the two things, he'll be able to stop or moderate that the book talks about because either he doesn't have the allergy or the obsession. He needs that drink and make sure nobody sees him, and he gets that fly out, and he has at it. The alcohol looks down at that fly, and he just loses it. But he's able to carefully pick that fly up, spread the wings out, and said, spit it out or else I'm going to kill you. So now, there is a difference. Where are you, a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety? And like I said, I reached the point that the book talks about. Can't imagine life with alcohol. Couldn't imagine life without alcohol. So now that I know what alcoholism is, now I can do something about it. And obviously, I believe I was an alcoholic waiting for a drink to happen. People say I was alcoholic from my first drink. I believe I was alcoholic from my first breath. I wasn't right from the get-go, the spiritual malady. I was a loser, a liar, a thief, a cheat, and a punk long before I drank. That's why I drank to begin with. We heard it earlier. If you have a drunken horse thief and you take the alcohol away, what are you going to have? You'll have a sober horse thief. And that's what we're talking about, this recovery from alcoholism. Anyhow, I come from this alcoholic home, and that was my favorite excuse, by the way. And Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way, I was a victim for 32 years. And I talked about it, the poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. Victims never get better. Victims stay sick. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, won't let you be a victim. If you don't want to get better, stay away from that book. I can guarantee you on that. But anyhow, I was a victim of this thing called alcoholism. I had a lot of good excuses. The first one was my childhood. Mommy and daddy alcoholic. Don't have to explain it to you. It's nasty. It is what it is. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. I'm alcoholic. My mom and dad alcoholic. My older sister's alcoholic. So immediate family, four out of the five of us were alcoholics. My older brother isn't. And I teased him today. I said, I guess there's a loser in every family, dude. He takes it pretty good. But anyhow, so I had that. And my favorite excuse was, if you had my childhood, you'd drink the way I did. I got news for you. It doesn't matter what mommy and daddy did for me, to me. It doesn't matter how they loved me, didn't love me. It doesn't matter how they abused me, didn't abuse me. It doesn't matter what any of that stuff. It doesn't matter what kind of parents they were, unless I want to stay sick and be a victim. I look at one thing and one thing only. It's what kind of son was I? And the book talks about that. As a rule, we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. See, I got alcoholism, ISM. I for I, that's for self, and the M for me. Alcoholism is, I know for that, is I'm so miserable. The ism of the alcoholism is the internal spiritual malady. The ism is ISM, the incredibly short memory, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the ism of the alcoholic is obviously, and there's a trend about this going around, is I sponsor myself. And I'll talk about that too, working my program, the ism of alcoholism. Here's the nature of this thing that I got. And it can even happen in sobriety. You ever blame somebody for why you're mad? Blame somebody if you're happy, you're sad, they did this, they didn't do that. What's that last word, two letters in that word? Oh, M-E in the word blame. Oh, that's right. I got one finger pointing out. I got three fingers pointing back at myself. Oh, I get it. Oh, the book says that's right. Our troubles are our own making. Our problems are our own making. That's right. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our troubles. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Get your calculator out. That's 402 symptoms of a spiritually sick person. That's alcoholism. Not drinking too much to get in trouble. Yeah, that's some of it, and that's a small part of it. So now that I know what alcoholism is, maybe I can do something about it. But I came from that background, and I was waiting for a drink to happen. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, the cards were really stacked against me, and I'm sure there's a lot of us in the room. I can feel it vibrating. I come from a certain nationality that we are cursed. I'm half Irish and half Scottish. Now, that's the double curse. And the you non-Irish people, us Irish people, we have called the Irish virus. And that's fear of dehydration. Dude, we drink everything we can get our hands on. Okay, yeah. So half of me wanted to drink all the time, and the other half was too cheap to pay for it. And I'll explain that to you about that later on. But, yeah. And I've heard, and especially around St. Patrick's Day, I heard if they took the Irish out of AA, they'd drop 1A. But I don't know if that's true or not. But anyhow. We could go on all night about that, but it's good. I'm proud of my heritage. But I joke about it. But the fact of the matter is I'm an alcoholic because I drank too long, too hard, too often. Because I have the spiritual malady, because I have the mental obsession, because I have the physical allergy. It's nobody else's. That's a cop-out. And that's what I'm saying. Victims don't get better. Victims stay sick. And I was a victim for a lot of years. And it wasn't until I reached the point in time when there was nothing else to look where I had to see the truth. So here is how it is, and my drinking was basically 17 years of fear, failure, and frustration. I joke about it today. I guess a good way of describing the way I grew up, you know, today how we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We have all these nice initials and terms. I think a child of my stature today would be called ADD or ADHD. Back in the 60s, they had some initials. What was it? Oh, yeah, ASS. That's right. That's what they used to call me. That's what I was. I was a punk. And you pour alcohol on it, that's what it's going to be. It was Johnny One Note, me, me, me. Selfish, self-centered, I didn't care about anybody else. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I made the mistake of talking to these old-timers. And I said, hey, I know why I'm an alcoholic. And he goes, oh, that's good. Watch those old-timers. By the way, they travel in pairs, if you didn't know that. But anyhow, I said to this one old-timer, I said, I know why I'm an alcoholic. He goes, oh, that's good. He goes, why are you alcoholic? I said, I come from a dysfunctional family. That guy stopped dead in his tracks. He said, what'd you say? I said, I come from a dysfunctional family. He goes, let me get this right. You're an alcoholic. You come from a dysfunctional family. That's the reason. I said, yeah? He goes, let me ask you one question. I said, sure. He goes, was you in it? So whatever you do, stay away from them because they had the answer. Then the other one next to him says, yeah, that dysfunctional family, I heard you're the one that put the funk in the word dysfunctional. So just stay away from them because, like I said, we have the audacity. Sometimes people get behind this podium and talk about people enabling. That big book doesn't talk about enabling. My people didn't enable them, enable me. I used them. I abused them. My alcoholism is mine. You ain't going to help me get sick. You aren't going to make me get sick. I'm going to do it all by myself. I'm going to use you to where there's nothing left. Don't tell me that people are enabling. That's cop-out. My alcoholism is mine. In this thing called Alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous, there's so many paradoxes, things that don't make sense. And one of them is when I own my own alcoholism, it no longer owned me. The second edition of our big book, and in fact, it was a professor from Kent, Ohio, had the four paradoxes. Die in order to live, surrender to win, suffer to get well, and of course, the alcoholic arithmetic, give it away to keep it. But there's so many paradoxes, everything is backwards of what it seems, and we talked about so much this weekend. And like I said, when I own my own alcoholism, it no longer owned me. Okay, the long and short of this is real quick, the only thing missing, like I said, was my first drink. And from my first drink to my last drink, that was the solution, not the problem. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had every problem known in the world. Legal problems, marital problems, back problems, car problems, work problems, everyone except one. And that was drinking. That was the solution, not the problem. That's why I'm alcoholic. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. So, started drinking in my early teenage years. My type of thinking was I'm going to party till the day I died. And little I know that party ended up being the four horsemen of alcoholism that he talks about in the book, the terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Now, one thing I would like to talk about real quick is I met this gal back in high school. Beautiful woman, angel of the first degree, I call her. She later became my wife and the mother of our four beautiful children. Now, I'm here to tell you that I drugged that woman and those four children through this thing called alcoholism. And the agony and the torture, sometimes they can suffer as much or more. And we heard about that this afternoon. Just a beautiful, beautiful description of how alcoholism, we kill people that don't even drink, every drink at a time. And I had the unmitigated self-centered pride, and I would say I never hurt anybody but myself. And that was a lie because I was killing them a day at a time, a drink at a time. They were innocent victims, hostages of this thing called alcoholism. This thing we're seeing on TV with the terrorism and the hostage taking, I got news for you, it's been around since there's been alcohol and alcoholism. That's just the way it is. I didn't have relationships, I had hostages. And you know what, you can't transmit something you ain't got. Yeah, I loved her, yeah, I loved our children, but you know what, when you got an empty vessel, you can only give what you got. You can't transmit something you haven't got. Anyhow, long story real short, I got away from my parents as soon as I could, as soon as I graduated. It probably, in theory, was best for all parties involved, but I took my three biggest problems with me, myself, my alcoholism, and my drinking. Of course, I moved in with three of my drinking buddies, and the next 6 years was, I call that phase of development, my Animal House days. If you ever saw that movie, that's how we lived. I got my first DUI back then, and we drank and partied every day, and that's just the way it was. Get up, party before school. We're all students at Akron U, and I would get out at noon. I had a part-time job, of course, found a place where they drank the way I did, and I would drink all afternoon at work, of course. By the time I got home at night, I'd drink till I partied and blacked out, passed out, whatever the case may be. Got up the next day and did it all over again. I never did get my college degree, and I, looking back on it, I think my BAC was higher than my GPA, and that's why they asked me not to come back. Yeah, so yeah, that's how they went. Anyhow, I was seeing this gal, and this is how I remember the story. She cornered me in a semi-lucid moment and proposed to me, and I said, I do. That sure sounds good, but that's not how it happened. It went down like this. She was with me, and I would control myself, I guess, the best I could when she was around some of the time. Anyhow, long story short is she said, settle down and marry me or else. Loved her with what I had, and I agreed to those conditions. So we got married. God did what he do, and he does a lot of things, and he did back then. I ended up getting a major good job up in Cleveland. That's 30 miles from Akron, and the ball was off and rolling. What I'm saying is I had a promising future. I was a Fortune 500 company. I was in fast track to management, had a pocket full of money, company car, beautiful woman. We had a house in the suburbs of Akron called Cuyahoga Falls, and God bless us with a family immediately. We weren't even married a year, and I think she came home with the news that she was pregnant with our first child. We have four kids within 5 years. I know there's a couple Irish twins in here. I don't know about being one, but I know about making them. How's that? So, yeah, our daughters are 11 months apart, so I know that drill. Anyhow, here's the point I'm trying to make is that I had everything a man that could have possibly wanted. And so many times we try to fix the alcoholic from the outside. Get her a husband, get him a wife, get him a job, get him an apartment, get him a car, do this, do that, and they'll be okay and they won't have to drink. Absolutely, positively not. I had all that stuff. If that was a thing for recovery or happily ever after, I wouldn't be here. I had all that stuff and I gave it all away. Some people say their alcoholism stole this, their alcoholism stole that. Mine didn't steal nothing. I gave it everything. My alcoholism is mine. I can't use that as a cop out. Won't do it, can't do it. So anyhow, the point I'm trying to make is, yes, I suffered from two isms back then. There's a lot of us in the room, I can tell that. I have suffered from alcoholism and Catholicism. Every time I came out of a blackout, she was pregnant, we were coming home with a kid. So I guess I was a loving drunk, not a fighting drunk. And, you know, we just had everything that a man could have possibly wanted. Now, here's the state of affairs. And when I give you this, you'll know the rest of my life was the same way. I'm not going to give you any more details. I was never around that house. I missed those kids growing up. When I was there, I was yelling, fighting, screaming, used and abused them every way except physically. Thank God I never laid a hand on them. Physically, I never abused them, but verbally, mentally, emotionally, I cut deeper with words than you can with a knife. And I'm here to tell you, even in sobriety, we recover a lot of things. I've recovered a lot of things, but you know one thing I can't recover? The things that I say. Not only when I was drinking, but in stone-cold sobriety. A word laid is a word played. And I tell you what, and I just cut them to pieces. And it was a god-awful mess. And here was the state of affairs. My wife was staying at home because I was making enough money, and we wanted her to be with the kids, raise them and all that good stuff. And, you know, I was at work. And if I would have been doing like a father and a husband agreed to do, then obviously things would have been okay. But here's the state of affairs. They were never fed and clothed the way they could have been, should have been. My poor wife was there when they come out and turn the utilities off, repossess the car, when the police were looking for me, when the boss was calling for me, when the bill collectors were there, and when it was a god-awful mess. The yelling, the fighting, the screaming, the tears, the headache, the heartache. And that's with the woman that I loved in my own flesh and blood. So if I would do it to them, you know what, I would do it to you guys. I was in trouble in every area of my life. I was in trouble at work, on probation, threatened to be sent home, you know, without pay, coming in early, sent home late. And like I said, and it was a god-awful mess. God bless my boss. He was a personal friend. He knew my wife and kids. This poor guy, he put up with me for 10 years. Legal problems, in and out of the emergency room, car accidents, paying the judges, the lawyers, the tolling companies. Needless to say, financial problems of setting up the phony charge account, writing the bad checks, the con for the con, borrowing from this guy to cover that guy, and it was a god-awful mess. I knew someday the deal was going to come off, was going to end, and the deal was I was going to lose her, the house, the kids, everything, all that stuff. But you know what? Like I said, I'd already reached the point. I couldn't imagine life with alcohol, couldn't imagine life without alcohol. Thought about killing myself many times over the years, but I didn't for two reasons. Laugh about it today, but it's kind of sad in a way. I didn't kill myself because, number one, if I did, I wouldn't be able to drink. It wasn't the thought that I might lose her, the kids, what it would do to them. I was so wrapped up in myself, I didn't even consider. Obviously, and the reason I did it is because I didn't have the guts to do it. So that's how my drinking was. 17 years, and we'll take you through the low lights, the high price for living the low life, and that's exactly what it was. And bad enough, you know, if I would have done it for myself, but like I said, I had the highway to hell, and a lot of people were riding along with the train. Anyhow, the long and short of that was, I joke about it, is the only thing worse than bad luck for an alcoholic is good luck, But it really isn't good luck. It's a thing called grace. Grace is a free, undeserved, unmerited gift. If you believe that, which I believe most of us do, and I know that is, it shouldn't be but for the grace of God, there go I. It should be but for the graces of God, there go I. More importantly than grace, what I've received is mercy, not getting what I do deserve. Because this thing called alcoholism is a death sentence. I love to laugh. I love to have fun in recovery and so on and so forth. But when it comes about this, this isn't a joking matter. The book tells us in no uncertain terms, for us to drink is to die. He says, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So I got a life sentence called alcoholism. I'll always be an alcoholic till the day I died. And also, like I said, if I got a life sentence called alcoholism, if I got a death sentence called alcoholism, it isn't looking too good for the home team. Except where it says in the book, we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So I got the ultimate reprieve from the governor. Every day on a daily basis, providing if I do the deal, what I'm supposed to do. The spiritual malady, obviously called alcoholism. Anyhow, this thing, talking about good luck, bad luck, and you know, I'd wake up, come to in the next morning, and I had a lot of good luck, and that kept me out there for a lot of years, and you know, I'd wake up and say, man, wasn't I lucky last night? I had nothing to do with it. This thing is called the thing of seconds and inches, because from my first drink to my last drink, I've buried hundreds of them. Buried hundreds of them. I said, that can never happen to me. And I'm here to tell you, yeah, that can and that will. And, you know, like I said, it's but for the grace of God, there go I. When I had these things that I couldn't get out, and we talked about it when I'd have this phenomenon, we love to talk about this behind the podium, a thing called trouble. I'll spare you real quick on all the troubles that I have. Really weren't troubles. They were blessings looking back on it. And really, it was a spiritual shaking, and God was trying to wake me up saying, come on, dude, get with it. Those weren't problems. That wasn't trouble. That was a blessing. He was trying to get my attention. But anyhow, when these troubles would come, all of a sudden I turned into a spiritual giant. We know what to do. God, help me get me out of this one. I promise I'll never do it again. Worked thousands of times. I call it a teabag guy, because when I was in hot water, I'd say like a teabag, come on, God, get me out of this hot water. And he'd come in and get us out. Use God like an insurance policy. When you got a claim, when you crash your car, you call the guy up and say, handle it. When I didn't need God, I thought his last name was Damn It, because I was running the show. It was a great I Am. You know, Johnny One Note, me, 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 me. And like I said, I joke about it today, but it's kind of serious. You know, the book talks about the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind. And I know he's talking about the insanity that precedes the drink, not the stupidity that follows. Two different worlds. But an alcoholic of my sort, I had this gift, and I think most of us do. I would go to any lengths to defend myself, my drinking, and my alcoholism. Reminds me of a story of an alcoholic of my sort that shows up at the doctor and both of his ears are burning really bad. And the doctor goes, my God, what happened to you? And the alcoholic says, well, I can explain it. My wife and I have this den, and it's where the TV is, and I have my relaxing chair, and I always come home after work and have a couple drinks. And sometimes in this den, she will be doing her chores, and one night her chore was to be doing the ironing. I guess I drank a little bit too much this one night, and I blacked out, passed out, whatever the case may be. She was in the kitchen and the phone rang and I kind of came to and I accidentally picked up that iron instead of that phone and burned my ear. Doctor goes, my God, that's terrible. But what happened to that second ear? How'd they get burned? That alcoholic without hesitation said, that damn fool called back. The point I'm trying to make, I believe that. When I was in front of the judge, I believed it was the car that I was driving. I believed that the people I was with. I believed it was the bartender. It's what I ate, what I didn't eat. Pursue it to the gates of insanity and death. I believed it. And we throw around in here alcoholics being in denial. The book doesn't talk about that. It talks about denial in Bill's story about his grandfather. It says in the doctor's opinion, what's wrong with me? I wasn't denying I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what one was. How could I deny it? I didn't know an alcoholic was somebody sick in body, mind, and soul. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. Denying would be somebody to ask me, where were you October 16th and 17th? If I said anywhere other than Perrysburg, Ohio, that would be denial because I know the truth. When I was confronted with the truth, I couldn't deny it because I didn't know it as the truth. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I didn't know what alcoholism is. How could I deny something? My alcoholic world is the only thing that I knew. Anyhow, and that was the beginning of the end. Get you through the end. It was 1985. And couldn't keep it going any longer. What I mean by that is we ended up losing the house. It wasn't too good. The Vealey World headquarters was being moved to the federal government. And we lost that house. It was an ugly day. Ruined my credit, ruined my wife's credit, made myself homeless, made my wife homeless. But the biggest sin of all was those four little kids. It was their house, too. And guess what? The big, great I am, the big shot. I couldn't even feed and clothe and shelter my children anymore, the great I am. So anyhow, we start jumping from house to house. Long story short, I got my second DUI. I do remember this date, September 20th of 1985. The rest of it all kind of blurs together, and it is what it is. It's just not important anyhow. Anyhow, the end was coming up, and my wife was well enough at that time. She said, do something or else. And no, the or else wasn't to take a vacation with the family. The or else was quit drinking or else I am gone in the divorce. Back in the 80s, treatment was big business. I was working, I had insurance. Went into treatment for 28 days, and that's when I was introduced to this beautiful fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I know A works if you work it and one if you don't. Today, I know when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. Me being the pupil, the teacher being Almighty God in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, if the pupil's sick and tired of being sick and tired, willing to keep his mouth shut, willing to follow directions, willing to do the things he doesn't want to do, doing the things that he has to do, and I wasn't done. I was there so I wouldn't lose her and those kids. I'm not saying that was a bad reason. There's no bad reason to get sober or go to treatment, whatever. But I wasn't done. You guys came in talking about AA, and I joke about it today. That's when I found out AA isn't a religion. I know it wasn't a cult. They don't wash your brain. They don't come in and do that and all that. I knew this deal was real. How I knew it was real is because I saw people out in the streets that were in AA and they were different. Language of the heart. Just like when Abby went to Bill, I couldn't deny the miracle in front of me when I saw these guys were changed. Anyhow, you guys, AA came in and gave me some nifty advice. Love to laugh about it today. You know, I had this one guy come in and say, you know, you haven't lost your wife, your kids, your job yet. Y-E-T, you're eligible too if you drink again. I told him, no, you don't understand. I'm different then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Next day, this other guy comes in and goes, you know what? I've never seen anybody too dumb for AA, but I've seen a lot of people too smart like you that got all the answers. They always end up getting drunk. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm different then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then the third guy came in and says, you know what? Give AA 6 months your best shot. If you don't like what you find here, take a drink. We'll gladly refund the misery. You can go back to the jails, the streets, detoxes, wherever you came from. Same song and dance for me. You don't understand. I'm different then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounded like that old Beatles song, and if there's anybody young in here, go home and Google it. That'll be your assignment for tonight. But anyhow, here's where it got really good is it was getting close to the 28 days, and they brought my wife in, and they had a family day. And they said, if he, talking about me, is going to get sober, he's going to have to do that AA thing. I said, thanks a lot. So they blew my cover, and they said, he's going to have to go to AA meetings and have to get a sponsor. They wouldn't let you out of this treatment center before you got a sponsor, and I got this guy to be my sponsor, but guess what? Didn't use them. News bulletin. If you can have the best home group, best sponsor in the world, but if you don't use them, they can't help you. I got news for you. Nobody can help you unless you ask or you let them. This is where I started working my program. So anyhow, it was time to get discharged. They gave me my bill. It was 28 grand, and they gave me my first big book. So my first third edition big book cost me 28 grand. They sent me to you guys. Now, this is where I started working my program, and here's what I did. ISM, remember, I sponsor myself. So here's me and my sponsor, me. Here was my program of recovery. Put the plug in the jug and go to 2 meetings a week. Now, here's what me and my sponsor did. We'd get there at 7:59 if it was an 8 o'clock meeting. Didn't want to get there too early. I might hear something that might help me. Anyhow, me and my sponsor put the plug in the jug and we were just so happy to be in AA. Now, me and my sponsor, I'm sure you guys don't have it where you come from, but in the Akron area, we have this back row. I call it relapse row, okay, and I call it inventory row. Me and my sponsors slid into relapse row and inventory row. It was a perfect fit. I was taking everybody's inventory. She was hot. He was a chump. They were losers. Me and my sponsor were back there with step none. You hear half measures avail you nothing? Me and my sponsor were on step none, and I guarantee you something if you're on step none, it's a big-time drunk. Me and my sponsor stayed dry for 6 weeks, and I got sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker because you took away the solution, my drinking, and you didn't give me a substitute. And if you thought I was crazy before, you should have seen it then. Now, little I know, me and my sponsor, that back row was the shoe department sobriety of AA, and somebody goes, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, it's real simple. That's where all the sneakers, the loafers, and the slippers are, and we all went back out. So, yeah, birds of a feather flock together. So, anyhow, me and my sponsor, remember I got 3 treatments. Drink, do the deal, blow my brains out. That hasn't changed. Those are my three treatments for alcoholism. You know what I did? I started drinking again. So within 6 months, my boss gave me the same ultimatum as my wife did. God bless him. That treatment was outpatient. I think that was 21 days. I think that big book cost me 12 grand. So I'll go to the bottom of the thing here and bring you up to the beautiful part of the story. Working my program, $40,000 worth of big books. I was dying from alcoholism. She finally left. Talking about my wife, took the kids. I get it. I really get it. I was literally choking the life of her and those kids, and for a matter of their survival, they had to get. My boss fired me. I get it. I was putting his job in jeopardy and everybody else there, and personal friend, you know, he knew what ramifications with my wife and kids and whatever, but he had to do what he had to do. So here's working my program. People get behind the podium talking about working their program. Putting the plug in the jug and sitting in an AA meeting. July 9th of 1987. I was in a body that wouldn't die and a mind that wouldn't live. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. I couldn't crawl out of that sewer that I put myself in, and I couldn't crawl back into Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, some people might call that a bottom. The book doesn't talk about a bottom. We heard about it earlier. It talks about a pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. Nobody needs a dictionary to look that up. I died. I joke about it. I was born in Akron. I died in Akron, and I was reborn. The book talks about that. And what I'm saying is July 9th of 1987, I don't know where these words came from. Well, I do today. And these words were, God, please help me. Lay down in the bed to die. It was over. I surrendered. I wasn't getting up. It was over. It was it. Like I said, couldn't get drunk, couldn't get sober. Tore up from the floor up, beat up from the feet up. I was dying. It was just, it was it. So needless to say, when I woke up, came to, whatever you want to call it, July 10th of 87, I was a little disappointed, okay? Sounded like a country western record, but all it was me and my dog in this house. So it was a beautiful thing. Anyhow, I got into treatment the third and final time. Here's the result of working my program. The clothes that I could fit on my back and the clothes that I'd fit in a duffel bag. 32 years old, the great I am. Busted, disgusted, and couldn't be trusted. I got into this treatment center and I was given some gifts that day to this very day. Obviously, been sober since then. Thousands of miracles, and it wasn't a day at a time. It wasn't an hour at a time. It wasn't a minute at a time. It was a heartbeat at a time, just like how it was out in the streets. It's the jungle. You know what it is. You're lucky if you don't die that day. So I get it. There was nothing new about that. But the gift I was given that day to this day is a thing called desperation, the desperation of a dying man, and I still got it. And that desperation is God and Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew the answer was here. I knew the answer was God. And it was the only thing left. The desperation of a dying man to put Alcoholics Anonymous and God in the 12 steps first and foremost. Still got it to that day. It's a beautiful gift. Another thing I got that day, some people call it a moment of clarity. I call it where the truth and the honesty intersect, and this is how it happened. I was in this treatment center in this room, and they had a side room. In the side room, there was a shiny thing. In the shiny thing, there was a figure in there. And as we go to this side room, they call it a bathroom. The shiny thing, they call it a mirror. And that thing in there when I got close was me. And for the first time as a 32-year-old man, all the yeah buts, all the finger point, all the excuse, all that BS, all the victim was stripped away. It was a beautiful gift. It was so painful. And I've been on the pursuit to the answer of this thing called alcoholism. And it's a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. And this is how it's happened for me. God took that mental obsession away immediately. Like I said, condemned to drink, condemned to die. And I knew the answer was God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I resistantly went because I wasn't real good about the God thing at all. In fact, if there was an agnostic or an atheist, surely that would have been me. But went back to my favorite nemesis, these old timers. And I said, well, these guys will be able to help me. I said, hey, I know you guys talk a lot about God. And I said, I'm not real good with that. Can you help me out? And they said, oh, sure, kid. They used to call me that. I said, there's only a few things you need to know about God. And yeah, there was two of them there. And I said, okay, what is it? First one says, well, you know, kid, there is a God. And I said, okay, I'm good with that. The other one says, the bad news is you ain't it. I wasn't good with that. So then the other one says, hey, by the way, besides that, you got to pray to God. With a cocky attitude, I said, why do I got to pray to God? They said, because he likes to hear from strangers. So whatever you do, stay away from those old timers. They got all the answers. But here's what happened to me. I found out if you believe, you receive. And if you doubt, you go without. If you pray, why worry? And if you worry, why pray? And I asked these guys, how does this thing work? And they said, HOW, the second appendix of the book called The Essentials of Recovery. The H for the honesty, the O for the open mindedness, and the W for what length you're willing to go to. They said, somebody like you, you got to follow the simple map if you want to get sober and stay sober. I said, what are you talking about? What map? They said, MAP, M for meetings, AA meetings, that is. A for the activity of the fellowship, not to be confused with the action of the steps, two totally different things. And P for the power of prayer. And the other one says, you got to get some spam. And that's not the stuff on the computer. That's stuff in the can, I thought. I said, I hate that stuff. They said, no. S-P-A-M. S for the steps. P for the power of prayer. A for the action and the activity. M for the meetings. And I found out God doesn't shut one door without opening another. I found out the treatments, discovery, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is recovery. Like I said, I was busted, disgusted, and couldn't be trusted. I had a place that was feeding me, clothing me, loving me back to life. And I knew by any stretch of the imagination, I should have been dead a long time ago. But for the grace of God, I knew the answer was God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, you got to go after it, and you got to go after it hard. Long story short is I went into a halfway house for 90 days, and that's where the magic really happened. And when I got in there, these guys told me what I needed to hear, not what I wanted to hear. The truth will set you free, but it'll bring you pain. And they said, one of the biggest things you got to change is you got a bad attitude, you got a chip on your shoulder, you got to get an attitude of gratitude. It's not an option. They told me a simple prayer, and I say it morning, noon, and night, and it can be applied to every situation in life, and it goes like this. Thank you, God, for what you've given me. Thank you, God, for what you've taken away. Most of all, thank you, God, for what you've left me. In other words, thank you, God, for what was, the pain, the agony, the hell, the torture of alcoholism. Thank you, God, for what is this day of sobriety, and thank you, God, for what will be. And I found out lack of power was our dilemma. There's one who has all power, not some power, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, all power. That one is God. And it's real simple. Either I be God or I believe in God. Anyhow, they told me people want to see a sermon, not hear one. It's easy to talk the talk, but walking the walk's a lot different. What you do speaks so loudly, people aren't even going to hear your words you're saying. What you do speaks so loudly, it's just background noise. Don't tell me you're grateful. You keep your mouth shut. Gratitude is an adjective. It's not a noun. It's a verb. You do something for somebody. That's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous go. He said, what you don't want to do is what you need to do. Get a sponsor, get a home group, and do this deal. And you know, another thing around the Akron-Cleveland area, they say, keep coming back. It gets better to the newcomers. That's a lie. It don't get better. It gets worse. I'm telling you how it gets worse. I picked up the Cleveland paper. Somebody I was running with got indicted. And you know how that is. One indictment, everybody's going down. I was living on general relief welfare. Food stamps, which I had to turn over to a halfway house. Wintertime was coming up. Didn't have anything but summer clothes. Didn't have a job. Didn't have a car. Didn't have cigarettes. My wife got the attorney. The marriage was over. I was in worse shape than ever before. It wasn't getting better. I was getting better, but it was getting worse. That's why I'm a real alcoholic. If it gets better when you quit drinking, you may be a problem drinker, a hard drinker, not a real alcoholic. I was getting better, but all that outside stuff was getting worse. And here's what God has done for me since then. And they told me, do you want a helping hand? I said, oh, yeah. They said, stick your hands out. And thank God I didn't lose them because of my alcoholism. They said, what do you got on the end of your arms, boy? I said, two hands. They said, they move? I said, yeah. Said, if you want a helping hand, you start right there. You do the possible, God will do the impossible. Faith will move a mountain, but you better bring a sponsor, you better bring a home group, you better bring a shovel, you better bring a decision, you better bring a determination, you better go for it. This thing doesn't happen, it's not a spectator sport. If you want what we have and are willing to go any lengths, then go at it. Thank God they told me the way it was. And here's what God did for me real quick. First job interview I went out on, I was hired by that company today. Still there today. That good job I lost has been replaced by a finer one. I get it, because God's the ultimate employment agency. If he's got the power to take me from the gates of hell, which I was in hell. We alcoholics come to AA, so we don't go back to hell. Most people go to church so they don't go to hell. They're speculating there is a hell. I'm telling you, I've been to hell. And you don't have to die to go there. And this is what I'm saying. This is what happened. Went out, got that job interview. I was well enough at that point in time, far enough along in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is that book, The 12 Steps, Start the Men's Process. Found out where my wife and my kids were living. It was a Saturday. It was about this time of year. It was nice and the leaves were coming down. Found out where she was, unannounced. I knocked on the door. She goes, what are you doing here? That was a good question, by the way. I said, can we talk? She hesitated. I said, yeah. I'm sure she said, yeah. And then I asked her the million-dollar question. Can I come in and talk? Bigger hesitation, you know what, she opened the door and let me in. We ain't got time to talk about it and how powerful it is, but you know what, I haven't moved out of the house since then. What I'm saying is that marriage was beyond any type of counseling, any type of therapy, any type of counseling. And like I said, if I would have dreamed for, would have written down everything I would have dreamed for or hoped for, I would have sold myself short. With God, all things are possible. God is good. God is great. And I had the people that loved me enough that showed me in the book, unequivocally, either God is or he isn't. God's everything or else he's nothing. So I've got two choices, either be God or believe God. That's what it says in the book. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Aren't you glad we ain't got an alcoholic God? Oh, my God. So anyhow, came back to Akron area, got the job. Financial recovery's come. Fast forward real quick. I could never carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, well enough, hard enough to tell you how good life is today. Don't get me wrong. Life is full of, I call them opportunities to grow. I call them lessons I haven't learned. Some people might call them problems or trouble. But it isn't. Here's what it is. If I'm right with me, and if I'm right with God, then I'll be right with everybody in this world. And life is going to go on. If I'm not right with self, or if I'm not right with God, when life goes on, all of a sudden, something happens, and it's a problem. And what do? I get old self-will out, attack the problem, and then it turns into trouble. Oh, that's right. Our troubles are our own making. Our problems are our own making. I get it. I really get it, painfully get it. Came back to the Akron area. They told me real quick, got to get a sponsor, get a home group. I know it's not the in thing to do in AA, but I've had one sponsor and one home group for 28 years. They told me, if your home group isn't the best or finest in AA, don't go to somebody else's and screw it up. So they won't let me out. So, yeah, nobody will let me sign back up. And I'm here to tell you, I can't keep up with that sponsor or home group. They run circles around me. And I came back to the Akron area and said, why do I need to get a sponsor? And they looked at me and said, you got to be kidding me. Don't you remember when you sponsored yourself? I said, okay. They said, your head's like a bad neighborhood. If you stay in the hood too long, you're going to end up getting caught in the mess. And I absolutely agree with that. And then, in fact, I've painfully, but God has been so good. And I'm here to tell you, you know, a lot of times we focus on the 12 promises after step 9. I'm a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I didn't water down my whiskey. I'm not going to water down my recovery. There's 152 of them in that book. One of them talks about a new power, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction. He talks about utopia. He talks about heaven. He talks about being reborn. He's talking about the sixth dimension. Those aren't black words on a white page in a blue book. That is the reality of this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. The seamless, hopeless condition of mind and body. The wholesale miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like I said, we don't have enough time to do that, and I'm sensitive of everybody's time. And I'm going to close up with a couple stories and a couple sayings real quick. And, you know, I was told, Harmon, your job is to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted. And I came home, I told my wife that. She goes, well, I'm here to tell you, you disturb the comforted. So I still drive her crazy, but she we just celebrated 38 years of being married, and just it defies... You know, like I said, with God, all things are possible. God is good. God is great. Here's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and here's how I stay. It's just kind of corny, but you'll remember, I think. So it reminds me of these three alcoholic rabbits. They were Irish. They used to drink their Guinness in the pub on Saturday night. And I guess their parents must have been alcoholic, too, but their name was Foot. The other one was Foot, and the other one was Foot. Anyhow, they were in there drunk, as their usual, drinking in the... It's about this time of year, cold, nasty, rainy, and they're about 2 hours in the drunk. Foot goes to Foot. He says, hey, I'm not feeling too good. Foot goes to Foot. He says, hey, Foot's not feeling too good. What should he do? Foot goes to Foot. He says, hey, tell Foot to finish his drink and go out and get some fresh air, and we'll check on him. Foot says, hey, Foot said, finish your drink, go out and get some air, and we'll check on you. He says, okay, so he finishes it and goes out. About 45 minutes into it, Foot goes to Foot. He says, oh, my God, we forgot about Foot. Foot says to Foot. He says, I forgot about him, too, but I got to finish my drink. Foot says to Foot. He says, I got to finish it, too. But anyhow, they went out, and they finished their drinks. They went out. Sorry about the pun, but poor Foot. It's too late. He already died. All 4 feet in the air. Rigor mortis starting to set in. Foot goes to Foot. He goes, what should we do? Foot goes to Foot. He says, we better go to AA. Foot goes to Foot. He says, go to AA. Foot goes to Foot. He says, yeah, look, we got 1 foot in the grave. Now, as corny as that is, that's how I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's how I stay here. 1 foot in Alcoholics Anonymous and 1 foot in God's kingdom. And, you know, I tell you, the story wouldn't be complete. And I'm going to go ahead and and do it real quick anyhow, is those girls were 4 and 5 when I got sober, and those boys were 7 and 9. And they were in as bad a shape as I was. July 10th of 1987, my wife had to move in with one of her sisters. They didn't even have beds to sleep on. They didn't have food. She wasn't working. They had absolutely nothing. I'm going to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and God have done to those ladies and gentlemen. Fast forward 28 years. Here's what's happened. Son number one, I think I'm going to get him DNA tested. You'll never guess what happened to that kid. He became a cop. Now, isn't that something? How's that? Yeah. I used to carry a pistol to break the law, and now he's got one to enforce it. There is no way. That kid came from hell, and he saw the worst of it, 9-year-old. Son number two went down to Columbus, Ohio State. He owns his own painting company. Here's what you guys did to the girls. You guys, and I used to take them to a lot of meetings, went to a lot of meetings in the beginning. My wife was working at nights. I used to have them in tow, little steps. You know what? They got more meetings than some of the guys they sponsored, but a different story for a different day. Here's what you guys, you loved them and showed them and gave them this way of life, and here's what you guys did to the girls. Daughter number one became an alcohol and drug counselor, and she's been in a lot of prisons. In fact, she graduated Bowling Green right down the road down there and got her master's and so on and so forth. Daughter number two had the same nurturing thing that you guys got her. She ended up getting her master's in counseling, and she ended up working at the battered woman's shelter and the rape crisis center, and now she's working at the Children's Service Board. But here's the magic of what you did for those two girls. When they found their spouses, they decided to get married in June. Their day, their most important day of their life. And they came up to me and said, "What day is Founders Day?" They planned their weddings around Alcoholics Anonymous and Founders Day. Now, if you don't think your sobriety can help or do anything or change the world, don't buy into it. Real quick, because if I didn't get sober, go back to work, wouldn't have had the money and sent them to college. They all went to college. Guess what? They met their spouses in college. Out of their spouses, they have children. We have 8 grandchildren. And had I not gotten sober, everything would have been different. Everything. So don't buy into that. Your sobriety can, does, and will change the world. Real quickly, a couple things I like to read, and we'll be done. And I guess this is the weekend for some poetic justice. And this is positively negative, and it goes like this. We drank for joy and became miserable. We drank for sociability, became argumentative. We drank for sophistication, became obnoxious. We drank for friendship and made enemies. We drank for sleep and awake and exhausted. We drank for strength to feel weak and end up feeling weak. We drank to feel exhilaration and end up depressed. We drank for medicinal purposes and acquired health problems. We drank to calm down and end up with shakes. We drank for confidence and became afraid. We drank to make conversation flow more easily, and the words came out slurred and incoherent. We drank to diminish our problems and saw them multiply. We drank to feel heavenly and ended up feeling like hell. We drank to cope with life and invited death. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous the last time, I did for 2 reasons, not to drink and not to die. Just a tip on the iceberg of this recovery thing, and it goes like this. I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given sickness that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing that I asked for, but everything I hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men most richly blessed. Our last 2 paragraphs go like this in our textbook. We realize we only know little. God will constantly disclose more to you than you ask. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you till then. Two last thoughts. They told me if you want to see the face of God, love somebody. I've seen the face of God all weekend because I love you all. Some of you I've met before, some of you haven't, but I love you all. And this one old boy, and don't shoot the messenger, we were talking about that earlier, he's told me something, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, and I hope it was a good AA meeting for you. I know it was for me. And he says, you know what an AA meeting and an orgy have in common? I said, what are you talking about, a good AA meeting? He goes, well, you always feel better when you're done, but you're not quite sure who to thank. So I want to thank you all because I feel a whole lot better. Thank you.